change the world, change the world, change the world. We can change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. Or shall I say welcome back to me, since I've been gone for a week. I'm Santita Jackson. I'm coming to you from WCPT, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. It's wonderful to be with you on Friday, July 23rd, 2021. What a joy, what a joy. We're going to talk about my family's trip to France, and there was a lot of us who went. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. We're going to talk about the Legion of Honor and what it means to the global human and civil rights community. What does it mean? What does it mean? Can't wait to talk with you about that. And, you know, why Reverend Jackson? Why now? What did we experience? You know, we met with President Macron a couple of times. He was a wonderful host, and we had a wonderful time there. And it was very, very interesting how our work, our civil rights work, our human rights work in the United States impacts people and inspires people all over the world. We're going to talk about that today. Of course, we have got Dr. Deborah Verholden back, and we're going to be talking with her about the Tokyo Olympics and a whole range of issues relating to COVID and, excuse me, more broadly to our health. And so let's get right to it, everybody, because, you know, I have missed all of you. I've missed you. I've missed you. I've missed you. I've missed you. And so we're hoping to get Pastor Tisha Williams up so that she can give you some good news today. But if not, excuse me, you know how I am. We're going to keep on rolling with this. Call me or text me at 773-763-9278. 773-763-WCPT. If you text me, GWC Injury Lawyers gives you the opportunity to do that. But call me or text me at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. I want to know what you think about the Olympics today. Should the Olympics go forward? I really don't think so. I mean, 80% of the country, you know, if vaccines are, excuse me, the great guard against COVID-19, which is very survivable, everybody, about 2% of people who get COVID die from it. It has a very, very low mortality rate, but you don't want the disease, right? Nobody does. If you know vaccines, there's a world push by pharmaceutical companies and governments to get everyone to get a vaccine. Okay, but you're going to host the Olympics, one of the biggest sporting event in the world, in one of the least vaccinated countries on Earth. Now, mind you, when I was getting on the plane, coming back to the United States, number one, I had to take a COVID test before I got on the plane to go to France. And then I had to take another COVID test to get back on the plane to come back home. Okay, so let's just be clear on that. But some of my friends who have received the shots, who have been vaccinated, if you will, they got to the gate, but because they had not taken the COVID test, they were not allowed to get on the plane. So tell me, what does that mean? Right? So call me, text me, 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. I want to know what you're thinking and how you're feeling today. So I missed you too, Joyce and Meddy and Marnie and Louie and, or is it Louis? And Fatou down in the Gambia, and Barbara, and everybody, like and share. We're on the Santita Jackson and Friends page on Facebook, and we are on Instagram, Santita Jackson IG, and of course the Santita Jackson Show YouTube channel. So please, everybody, like and share. Can't wait to talk with you about a lot of great things today. In Chicago, we're going to have a high of 86 degrees. It's a little muggy. I can feel it. Partly cloudy. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 94 degrees. Wow, partly cloudy. The Olympics, that's going to be the story for the next few weeks. The biggest sporting event in the world. And then just in a few more months, we've never had this little space in between the Winter and Summer Olympics. We are going to have the Winter Olympics in China in just a few months. Wow, there's so much going on, everybody. The Dow closed up 25 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 52 points, and the S&P 500 closed up 8 points. Let's get to a few of these headlines before we get on to the rest of the show, everybody. Mississippi's Attorney General has urged the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, while we're talking about all these other things, that is really up for grabs, everybody. The landmark decision legalizing abortion nationwide prior to viability, which can occur around 24 weeks of pregnancy when a woman is about 6 months. Attorney General Lynn Fitch called the 1973 decision egregiously wrong. That's Mississippi's Attorney General, and asked the high court to allow a controversial Mississippi law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks to go into effect. The case reignites the debate surrounding abortion and comes as other states, emboldened by the conservative Supreme Court majority, as they are passing increasingly restrictive abortion-related regulations, it's emboldening them. What do you think is going to happen? This is the Mississippi Gestational Age Act, which was passed in 2018. It was blocked in federal court, but now that the state has asked the Supreme Court to overturn precedent, all eyes will be on the conservative justices. What do you think that they will do? The United Nations is warning that the threat from jihadi terror groups is expanding, suggesting they thrive where pressure against them is waning. In Afghanistan, where the U.S. is wrapping up its military withdrawal, the U.N. is warning of a potential further deterioration in the security situation. Biden administration officials are wrapping up the urgency of their messaging on COVID-19 as the dangerous Delta variant continues to spread. The administration is also sending $100 million to rural health clinics to boost vaccine education and access, and is using another $1.6 billion in the American Rescue Plan for testing and other resources in high-risk areas, everybody. Wow. And, well, they're still trying to find out what happened on January 6th. Speaker Pelosi and House Democrats are moving ahead with their investigation of the January 6th attack on the Capitol and are looking into adding more GOP gravitas to their efforts after Republican leaders withdrew participation on the Select Committee. Pelosi told reporters yesterday that despite House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's decision to remove all five of his choices for the panel after she vetoed two of them, the committee will proceed as originally planned. Well, there's another condo in Surfside, Florida, where we had the tragic collapse of the condominium just a few weeks ago. It has been evacuated after this building has been deemed unsafe. It's the evacuation of Regent Palace, a set of buildings that is 70 years old, which began July 9th, a day after an engineer hired by the Condo Association found more problems with the structural integrity following an initial inspection, according to their board president. Wow. I was told by a friend of mine who just made her transition, God rest her soul, that those buildings never should have been built. They never should have been built. What do you think about that? Wow. Now these people, they're going to get some compensation, but they are also, they're essentially homeless. U.S. jobless claims show surprise gain well above expectations. Weekly jobless claims unexpectedly moved higher last week, despite hopes that the U.S. labor market is poised for a strong recovery heading into the fall. Initial filings for unemployment insurance totals $419,000 for the week ending July 17, well above the $350,000 that was expected. Wow, everybody. And in the meantime, inflation is pushing consumer goods up past the breaking point for many Americans. Are you paying more as you go to the grocery store? Yeah, many people are doing that as they are filing for jobless claims, everybody. In the meantime, Congresswoman Maxine Waters is calling for a federal probe into an alleged, get this, everybody, executioner's game. That's right, in the L.A. Sheriff's Department. That's right. She called on the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, to investigate the alleged executioner's gang. The gang was accused of celebrating police shootings by a whistleblower within the station. Wow. What do you think about that, everybody? What do you think about that? What do you think about that? You know what, Paul? Get Pastor Williams up. She just reached out to me. She is ready to go. And so we're going to get some good news from her today because we certainly do need it. In the meantime, we need it. Why? Because what's happening here in Chicago? CBS Local is reporting I fear getting hit from behind. Chicago area expressway shootings are at an all-time high. What's going on, everybody? What's going on? Wow. I mean, people are telling me they're going local. They're not riding expressways because they are afraid of getting shot. Now we're seeing that this is at an all-time high. And as we're seeing the weather go crazy all over the world, guess what? Dubai is making fake rain, everybody, created by shocking clouds to tackle their heat wave. They're making it rain. Okay, I couldn't help it. So let's bring up Pastor Tisha Williams, and let's get some good news today. Pastor Williams?
Good morning, Santita. How are you?
I am so glad to hear your voice today. How are you?
I'm so glad to hear yours. I am doing very, very well. No fake news on this end, but doing
oh, my gosh. It's, you know, there's just so much going on. We've got the Olympics, you know, that we're talking about. People are afraid to drive on the expressways here in Chicago because they're getting shot. Jobless claims are up, you know, and as jobless claims are up, people are not able to afford the food because the food's going up, too. Oh, help me, help me, help me. I need some good news. I need it. Some inspiration today. Goodness gracious.
I understand. Don't we all? Well, today I want to talk about something that we all know and that we're all familiar with, a word that we toss around quite frequently. The word is love. Mm-hmm. If I were Captain and Tennille this morning, I would say that love will keep us together. You all are super familiar with the passage of text in 1 Corinthians that defines what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful, arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist in its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they'll come to an end. Tongues will cease. Knowledge will come to an end. Faith, hope, and love abide, and the greatest of those things is love. It's interesting. I read an article where some children were asked what love is. Can I read some of them to you?
Oh,
one said, love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. Love is what makes you smile when you're tired. This is probably my favorite one. When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. I love that one. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how this is what children between the ages of 6 and 8 were asked to describe about love. And they came up with these beautiful anecdotes. And I can't help but to wonder if as God's children, we have this same level of understanding when it comes to love. If someone were to ask you to define or describe love, what would you say? Paul gives us an accurate enough description in 1 Corinthians 13. But what I have found to come to be true is that the church is a body. And we often acknowledge and bring attention and highlight and criticize what we can see about the body with little regard for what we cannot. But just like the human body is made up of systems that we can't live without, the church body is made up of systems that we cannot live without. Our physical bodies can't live without blood. And guess what? The church can't live with what I consider to be the lifeblood of the church, and that is love. And maybe you might be surprised to hear that, but love is integral to the church and believers as blood is to our physical body. There's no substitute for blood. I love what you said about the rain. How could there be a substitute for rain? Well, the people in Dubai may have found a substitute for rain, but don't you know there's no substitute for blood? Just as there is no substitution for love. I want to encourage somebody today and say love cannot be manufactured or made. Those who have the love of God in their hearts are the best source of love for people who need it. You give love when you've been given love. I submit to you this morning that love is the greatest power in the universe, greater than any nuclear army, greater than any standing army, greater than any political system, greater than any force that can rally itself against it. Forget what you may have heard or what you may have seen. The absolute truth of the universe is that we will find nothing that can stand against love. Love is without equal. Love is without parallel. Love is without rival. The greatest force in life is love, because it sustains life and it completes life. The believer at our heart is the greatest commandment, that we love God, we love others, and we love ourselves. I'm reminded of a story about a really great example of love. I think about Diana Ross, who said, "What the world needs now is love, sweet love." Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. Would you guys agree with that? I'm reminded of a story of a young boy who lived outside of a lake. And one day it was warm and hot, and he was so enthusiastic about running into this lake. He just took off his clothes, took off his shirt, took off his shoes, and with reckless abandon just ran into the pond. His mother was looking at him out of the window, and she began to scream his name as he was swimming, because she could see that as he ran into the pond, an alligator was swimming toward him. She began to scream his name profusely, and he turned around, heard his mother, and began to swim toward the shore. And just as she reached the edge of the shore, the alligator clamped down on his leg, and thus began a ferocious tug of war for this boy. But in the end, the mother is scratching and clawing at the boy's arm, trying to pry him from the clutches of this alligator. Ultimately, a farmer drove by, saw the alligator, took out his gun, and shot the alligator, thus releasing the little boy from his clutches. The little boy was in the hospital, and the reporters came to talk to him about this amazing survival feat. And as they're talking to the little boy, the reporter asked, "Can I see your scars?" The little boy shows the reporter his legs. The reporter is in awe, but the little boy says this. He says, "If you think my legs are something, you should see my arms. I've got amazing scars on my arms from when my mom tried to rescue me." You see, for that boy, it was those scars that mattered most. The scars of love, where a mother refused to let go of the boy that she loved so much. I want to encourage somebody today that whatever your faith, whatever your belief, please know that there's a power in the universe higher than us, some of us call him Jesus, who loves you enough to keep holding on no matter what. And you know what? That's love.
Amen to that. I don't know about you all, but I really needed that today. Because, you know, and love doesn't degrade now, does it? I mean, I told you all about a week ago, I lost... Really, there was no one closer to me than my dear friend Candace Simmons. And in fact, I'll be at her funeral on Monday in New York. And it's really been tough. But you know, I found out I was on my way to a wedding literally 2 Saturdays ago. And so I had to go to the wedding. You know, you kind of have to compartmentalize. But it was still uppermost in my mind because I had just spoken with her a couple of days before. I just could not believe it. And it was odd, Pastor Williams, because I hadn't spoken with her. And then I called her mother, and turns out she had passed. She'd had a heart attack in the middle of the night and was gone just like that. Mm-hmm. And, my mother, my brothers, my father, my sister, they've all called because they knew her, because we were all, you know, when you get close to one of us, you get close to all of us. And sure. And my mother said, you know, remember, love never dies.
Never.
She said, you all have... you know, been through the end of college together, your early work years. You know, when I was moving out of New York, you know how your friend will come on over and help you to pack. Had a lot of stuff to pack. And then she did the same thing when I moved into my place here. She said, "Oh, I'll come on and help you." But you know, it never goes anywhere. It never, ever, ever goes anywhere. And I think that we have to be reminded of what love, how important it is. And tell people, my godmother, Irene Ware, who was a giant in radio, said, you know, to me and to our audience every day, tell someone you love that you love them and mean it. Why was love uppermost in your mind today?
Because of the state of everything that's happening in the world today. Mm-hmm. And also just to remind people, more specifically as a pastor, I think about what sometimes parishioners or people think is most important. Is it the building? Is it worship? Is it singing? At the core of it, all of that is motivated by love. And I truly believe what I said, what the world needs now is love. I am one of those people that still believes in the goodness of people. I do believe that love will conquer all. Call me naive. But love is at the forefront of my mind today because I think it's the remedy for most that ails us. I really do.
I do too.
Love and wisdom. I do. I really, really do. If we would just take a moment to exercise a bit more kindness and love and understanding, what kind of place would the world be?
You know, what did Dr. King, he wrote the book, The Strength to Love. We keep treating love like it's the weakening agent. But love is at the center of peace. Love is at the center of justice. Love is at the center of everything that we say that we want to be about. And yet we use so little of it. Our language is so
harsh. Have we ever considered?
Oh, no, please, Pastor.
No, have we ever considered how much more strength it takes to love than to hate?
Mm-hmm.
I often equate it to this. You know, it takes think of a garden, right? You never have to search for a weed in a garden. Did you ever realize that?
Mm.
Even in springtime, the dandelions just pop up and they're considered to be a weed, right? We never have to look for weeds in a garden. It's the fruit that we have to work for. It's the harvest that we have to toil for. Those are the things that are difficult to find and to gather. Weeds, never. They just present themselves. And I think about love that way, too. Love has to be worked for. Love has to be cultivated. Sometimes the seeds of love have to be planted. It's not always easy to love, and yet we are called to do it. Hate, we can look at somebody immediately with a critical eye. We can say something negative to someone without any thought, really. But to love, to find the goodness, that's something that we have to harvest, something we have to work for oftentimes and toil for. And it takes a strong person to do that. Do you have the strength to love? Do you have the courage to love? I think that's the question that we put out there today.
Think about that today, everybody. Do you have the strength to love? Do you have the courage to love? Do you have the wisdom to love? If I can tell you this as we go to this break, I was very ill in 2004. And my brother Jonathan said something that struck me because it happened suddenly. I'm in the hospital, you know, does she need surgery right now or what? And then, you know what my brother Jonathan said? The only thing I could think of was when I spoke with her. Did I tell her that I loved her? He said, that's all I wanted to know. Something to think about, everybody. I love you, Pastor Tisha Williams. Pastor Tisha Williams, I hear you, sis. I hear you. I feel you. Let's talk about, we'll do it on the other side. We'll be right back. Right back in just a minute. Santita Jackson Show.
Suffer in silence. We can change the world. Change the world. Change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world. We can change the world. Change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
More in hate to a place of love. It's not too late. Gotta save the children. We can't wait. Let's change the world.
That's right. We can do that. What we need is love, sweet love, everybody. The only thing that there's just too little of. I'm Santita Jackson, coming to you from WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 radio. My brothers and sisters to the north in Minneapolis, St. Paul, sending Gary Hines and Sounds of Blackness and Spike Moss and Pastor Jerry McAfee and so many of our brothers and sisters, so much love today in particular, and peace upon your town, your city, and peace upon Chicago as we're seeing these shootings just take off in these expressways. You know, violence is a public health issue, but COVID-19, we're in the midst of this pandemic. And so, of course, you know what time it is. We've got Dr. Deborah Furholden, one of the world's leading epidemiologists, and before we get into anything else, you know, right now, the opening ceremonies for the Tokyo Olympics are taking place, Dr. Deborah Furholden. Now, let's just kind of set the table here. A couple months ago, for the COVID-19 virus, people were 1% vaccinated, or 1% of the Japanese people had taken the shots. They are hesitant because they've had some problems with vaccine rollouts in the past, vaccines particularly that came from the West. So they push back against them. And that is they're right and that's their experience. But now roughly 20% of the Japanese are vaccinated, but that's not near herd immunity. I mean, at all, right? So why the push to have the Olympics? I mean, just why? You tell me why. Why the push? And how safe is it? Taylor Crabb, who is the first U.S. athlete set to compete in the Olympics, has tested positive for the coronavirus in Japan. He was the first U.S. athlete expected to compete in the Summer Olympics, and he's tested positive while in Japan. Beach volleyball player Taylor Crabb will be replaced on the top U.S. men's team by Tri Bourne, who will now play with Jake Gibb this weekend. Wow, he said via Instagram, after taking every precaution, getting vaccinated, and following protocols, "I have tested positive for COVID-19. I'm symptom-free, thankfully, but deeply disappointed to not be able to join Jake on the sand and compete as a member of Team USA. I faced adversity before. I will face it again, but it doesn't take the sting out of this situation." He's been vaccinated. You know, and you have to get tested. Even when you've been vaccinated, you have to be tested before you travel internationally. So clearly he tested COVID negative before he got on the plane. Tested COVID negative because they're being tested daily. And then they found out that he was COVID positive. We're seeing a lot of breakthrough viruses more and more. You know, and yet we're hearing more about the unvaccinated being the problem here. Well, let's back up, because I've just put a lot on your plate, but you can handle it all. Do you think it's a good idea, in the midst of this pandemic, in a country that has declared a state of emergency with respect to COVID-19, is it a good idea to go forward with this multi-billion-dollar enterprise called the Olympics?
It's so interesting. It almost feels like you're saying, do you think it's a good idea if the house is on fire and there's no, you know, body in the house for a bunch of healthy people to run in the house to play around? Like, no, I don't think it's a good idea.
Oh, my gosh. Oy.
I don't think it's a good idea. And even worse, there's an article that just came out on NBC News. They said more than 100 U.S. athletes who went to the Olympics are unvaccinated.
That was an option?
Yeah. That was a choice?
And there's 600 on the team. 100? That's right. They're not. But it is still a choice, even though increasingly avenues are being shut down that are forcing people, even as we're seeing breakthrough viruses, as we're seeing young people and other people develop heart problems. I just feel like there's a rush, and I'm, Dr. Shanina Knight, and we're going to have to get her back on and talk with her. She posted something about make sure you understand what antibodies are. I'm just paraphrasing her. She said, if you get COVID-19, you need to know about antibodies. Right. Yep. And she said, have you looked into that? Well, it's something that you need to look into so that you can know that if you get COVID-19, you need to be asking for the monoclonal antibodies, because there's something that you can do to fight COVID-19. Help me. What are we looking at? What are we looking at?
Well, it's unfortunate because this things that are avoidable, that have a high risk.
Dr. Deb?
Oh, look, finger hit the mute button. I was just being brilliant. I always tell people things that are really high risk, things that are high risk have the potential to pose a lot of harm, but that aren't necessary. You know, when you're five, okay, whatever, right? You know, I remember being five and sort of wondering what it would feel like to jump from the top step in our house. You know, sometimes I'd come running down and I would skip the last two or three and I'd jump. And then I noticed as I got older, I would skip more steps. And then it got to the point, me and my brother, and we would, of course, do this when my mom wasn't home because she would have killed us. But we would start jumping almost from halfway down the steps. And I'll never forget being at the top of the steps, and I wonder if I could make it all the way, 13 steps, all what? The way from the top to the bottom. Now, of course, you know what happened. I went to jump. I made it however far I made it. I hit that step, and then I rolled down the rest of the steps. Broke my ankle, messed my leg up, messed my elbow up. Think I cracked a tooth. and it was crazy because as a kid, I, even though I was messed up, it somehow seemed worse. Because it was like burrowing a hole in me to fit, you know, to see if I could accomplish this great feat and jump from the top of the steps to the bottom. Those types of risks don't make sense to me for adults. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me for an adult. Like, what's in it for what? Right? Now, don't get me wrong. I do realize the Olympics is this world-class, you know, long-standing, you know, competition. And there are people that have trained, you know, their whole adult lives or much of their childhood. You know, most of these folks have been training since early in childhood, you know, for these opportunities to compete. But it's not like this opportunity isn't going to come back around. It's not like this is a once-in-a-lifetime deal. If you've been training for the Olympics and if you're on that Olympic team, chances are you didn't just wake up a couple months ago and decide you wanted to be in the Olympics and started training and then made it onto the team. These are people who've been preparing for this their whole life. So the notion that even as a global society, we would move forward with this thing like this, and now it's up to individual countries or individual athletes to have to pull out, we should have all hit the pause button. You know,
well, let me ask you this.
I don't understand why so many of them are unvaccinated and why, as a global community, would we send athletes, our best athletes from all over the world, to a country that has such a vaccine shortage and such a boost in cases? The global
shortage
should have been sending.
They're not just hesitant. They don't want them. These people push back because they've had bad experiences with vaccine rollouts before. Measles and rubella specifically 30 years ago. So, you know, my thing is shutting down the conversation on why people push back against different medicines. And we know people of color have been treated very differently in trials than white people have been treated. It's all of that. So I'm like, okay, then let's have a conversation about it. But while you're sitting up here pushing vaccines, you're pushing these shots to everybody, you would send people to one of the least vaccinated places in the industrial world. Are you serious? And 80% of the people don't want us there. They're like, look, this can be a super spreader event. And this young man, Mr. Crabb, who was our first athlete who was set to compete, guess what? He's been vaccinated. He's not a problem. The unvaccinated person. No. The vaccinated guy got COVID. Now, fortunately, the vaccine clearly mitigated the seriousness of his symptoms. And we don't know if they have not told us if he's taking these antibodies also, which is something they don't talk about, which is a problem. Dr. Knighton did say, and she asked a question, you know, just in case you get COVID-19, save this post. Ask your health provider about antibody options. Said monoclonal antibody treatment can lower your chances of your mild to moderate symptoms getting severe. These antibodies help your system recognize the virus and fight it off more effectively. But you look at how we deal with groups. As an epidemiologist, and you're one of the most esteemed epidemiologists on earth, what would your advice to the International Olympic Committee be? Because they've invested billions now. Billions.
Well, this is the problem. Once people got some real skin in the game, they don't want to go back, and they don't want to turn back. But my thing is some quote I saw somewhere in my travels about failure, and I've just totally taken it on as my own. If I'm going to fail, I'd like to fail fast, right? You ever set out on something? And I've done a few things, you know, that seem like well thought out or well planned, and I consider myself a pretty reasonable person, good logic. I've managed to, you know, grow out of jumping from the top of the steps and make, you know, better choices. But I've had some things where I'm like, man, this ain't working out. Okay, I'm going to try this way. Okay, I'm going to do this. Okay, I'm going to pray on it. Okay, I'm going to, and I'll just keep going in the face of it's clearly not working. It's not going the way I had expected. I'm not going to get the outcome that I wanted. And for whatever reason, it was something I really cared about or I had put too much money in. In poker, we call it pot committed. There's a point in the game where you've got too many chips on the table to turn back, even if it looks like you're going to lose. It's called pot committed. Like, I've come too far to turn back. And so I don't know if that's what that thinking was, but I feel like it's irresponsible because these are people's lives, you know? And it's not just, it's not that the life of a world-class athlete is any better than the life of anybody, right? I'm not saying that. But when you assemble the world's best athletes and put them all together and potentially expose them all to something that, if it doesn't kill them, could at a minimum forever take away their ability to be a world-class athlete. See, people forget about, you know, there's a whole lot of people who get COVID, who don't die. Some of them maybe aren't even hospitalized, but they live with these long-term symptoms. I have a very good friend. He's a runner. He still says, I still have not gotten my wind back. Is he able to run? Yes, but he can't run as far and he can't run as fast because he don't have the same lung capacity. So he's now dealing with the doctors, and he got COVID about 8 months ago. He's dealing with the doctors now, and they're trying to figure out exactly what shifted for him. When he got COVID, he wasn't even a hospitalized case. He almost didn't know that he had COVID until he was very fatigued, but his girlfriend got it. And she had a lot more outward symptoms. And that's sort of how they knew. So what are we going to lose by trading off and saying, we got to do this right now? What are we trading off in our future? We don't know, but I can guarantee you this is not going to be a game where it's going to be zero sum. Whatever we're gaining right now in this little bit of, you know, people having some semblance of normalcy, seeing the Olympics go forward, we will be trading off for the future and future potential and people's health and all of that. And don't be shocked when lawsuits come out of this either.
Well,
that
who do
very
well,
much gonna, not surprise me.
I'm going to ask you this: who do they sue? Because you have the world athletes. This is a global event. And they're all going to, these athletes are living in the Olympic Village. I mean, these women who are athletes who've just had babies, who are nursing, they're not allowed to bring their children with them because they said the child would have to be in a hotel room. So all these people are living in one place, dorm style. I mean, it's not like they're living in individual rooms. And then guess what? Dr. Deborah Verholden, epidemiologist, associate dean of public health at Michigan State University, PhD from Johns Hopkins University. You all count all the numbers. These are your colleagues. They're all going to leave Tokyo, and they're going to go back home. What? How is that supposed to work?
Well, they're going to go home, and then they're going to leave Tokyo, go home, and then, you know, bring this gift back, many of them, for all of us. I mean, and then I really wonder how much honesty and truth and reporting will we really have about who's impacted, how they're impacted, how many, you know, and all of that. I just personally think that this was a really, really, really bad idea. That's just my opinion. I think it was a bad idea. I don't think it was really informed by good public health. I think it's fueled by something else. And I think we could have done this another way, or we could have postponed this. And it's unfortunate because we've seen all these cases of Delta virus, of Delta variant. And we keep talking about Delta, and I'm not saying that Delta is not important. It seems to be one of these more robust, you know, variants that really has stuck around and seems to cause a lot more disability and death and spreads more easily. So, like, it's important. But we've got more than 3,000 COVID variants. We've got more than 3,000 variants of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And with a known variant that is as aggressive and is as debilitating as the Delta variant, I'm like, was this the time to do this? Like, I honestly, Santita, the vaccine did do something for us, right? The vaccine did tip the scales a lot. But our initial initial flattening of the curve, which took quite a long time, admittedly. Mm-hmm. But that initial flattening of the curve was in the absence of any vaccine. It was all prevention. You know, the vaccine was supposed to be the thing that really just tipped up over the scales. But because we keep trading off, because we keep going for that right now thrill, you know, everybody want to jump from the top of the steps. Because people keep going for that right now thrill, we're paying the price later. You know, it was crazy. And when I did this, actually, this was right before our family reunion. So here I am at the family reunion. I can't play in the big kickball game. I can't play in the volleyball game. I can't do the three-legged race because my ankle broke. My arm is in a sling. I look terrible. My face is scratched up. Chipped. But in that moment, I just wanted what I wanted, and I did it. And for the, you know, 0.8 of a second, I was in the air going down the steps before I realized that I was not going to make it to the bottom. It was great.
Wait a minute. And DCFS is calling right your parents? Oh, look, you guys, I'm not laughing at abuse, but, you know, we used to have all kinds of accidents. They'd always go, you know, get to my mother. Now, you know, my mother is quite the salty one. She was like, "You think I'm beating up my children? This child's crazy." My brothers would jump from the top of the stairs. That's why when I heard you, I said, "Oh my gosh."
Yeah.
And they even pulled a big rope, this velvet rope that was attached by brass into the wall. Honey, Jesse grabbed that and ran down. And girl, it pulled a big plug of plaster out the wall, two of them. And it stayed like that for a couple of years. My mother said, why am I going to put it back? He's going to do it again. And they were not permissive. But, you know, I guess, I'm thinking about, I've spent more time on the Olympics than I thought. But, you know, they're having the opening. They're having the opening ceremonies as we speak. And, you know, we're looking at more and more people, because I was just in France, you know, and they had protocols for people who are unvaccinated, protocols for people who've been vaccinated. And now they're about to do another shutdown in Europe. And it's interesting. You've got Israel and you've got the UK, two of the most vaccinated countries on earth. And they're having all of these breakthrough cases. Now we see about 20% of the cases that are COVID cases in L.A. are now breakthrough cases. What can we, and I can now understand why you were so excited to bring Dr. Shanina Knighton, you know, forward.
Yeah.
Girl, we've got to talk to her, because no one's talking to us about prevention.
Yeah.
You know, and when we were flattening the curve, you said that, look, we're winning. This is before the vaccine even came out. You said, look, we're beginning to win. And you would go through, you said, I feel like I'm a broken record, but you were not. I mean, you were telling us what we needed to do every day. What can we do now? Because these athletes, bless their hearts, they're over there and they're going to be coming back.
This is the time for prevention. And I'm really hoping that, the same experience that your friends had when they were trying to come back and they hadn't gotten that COVID test, that our colleagues, all colleagues who are traveling, do the same thing. And it's really funny because, you know, the Olympics to me, it's nothing more than the fact that they're in Olympic Park and they're all kind of, you know, on top of each other, dorm style and all of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like going to a large indoor gathering every day for however long they're going to be there. Like, it just is such a high risk, you know? So I hope that at a minimum for the people who've chosen this, that there's some provisions put in place about their reentry into their country, and that they would have to quarantine before they come back so that they don't become the people. And it's not just the athletes. It's everybody connected to the enterprise.
That's more than
just the athletes.
You're right. You've got the people who are over there who are covering, the journalists. One or two. I mean, you have tens of thousands of people over there. I want you to speak to Joyce Anderson. She just wrote in this. She said, "Dr. Deborah Verholden, you are talking about me. I had COVID, very, very mild symptoms. I caught it from my husband who passed away. God bless you, Joyce. God bless you." And 1 year later, she's considered a long hauler. I mean, my prayers are with you. And Pastor, Pastor Williams, you can say something to Joyce before we go. And she's still experiencing symptoms. And she said, yes, yes, I am vaccinated.
People just don't. And it's unfortunate because when it was your lived experience, you really, really get it. But people, and I don't know if they're just not hearing the stories. I don't know if they're hearing them and not believing them. Or I don't know if they're saying, well, it didn't happen to me or it's not me, so no big deal. I don't know what the gap is. And maybe there's different gaps for different people. But this stuff is real. You know, there's probably nothing about Joyce, the exceptional or unique, that would have let us know in advance that this would be the outcome for her. And, you know, my heart just goes out to her, Joyce, in prayers for you and your whole family. And I'm sorry about the loss of her husband. These are real things that have happened to people, you know, and we can't come back from that. She can't get her husband back. She can't go back and be unexposed and get her win back, you know, like, and the crazy thing is we're just trying to just learning these things. Well, we learned it a lot sooner than we started acting like we knew it, but we're just still trying to unpack and figure out what can we do? What can be done? You know, it's just some things you don't want to learn after the fact. You know, there are some lessons where you don't just get, you know, some bumps and scrapes and scratches and, you know, miss the family, you know, kickball game where you're now stuck living with something. I have another friend who is a exercise physiologist. And so she, you know, teaches people how to move their bodies, basically. Mm-hmm. And then she also is an aerobics instructor. And she was a heavy set woman most of her childhood and adult life. And she's still slightly on the heavier side, but just super fit. Like, super fit. You can tell she's one of these people. She just, you know, they used to call us big boned. Mm-hmm. She has a large frame, but she's in impeccable shape. All of her metrics were good. You know, A1C, cholesterol, you know, resting heart rate, all the things that we look at as healthy. She just might be a little bit bigger than one might think of when you think of like somebody who's a aerobics instructor or in really great physical condition, but she was. She got COVID and she's one of these long haulers. Mm-hmm. She is thinking about now, what is she going to do career wise? Because she, I can't remember the name. I will find out. We can talk about it next week. There's an actual condition that she's now been diagnosed with that, and they have put in front of it, COVID induced. This was completely induced by COVID. And I know we've talked about this, a lot of people with other conditions and some autoimmune conditions and some other things, that COVID has accelerated the pace of it.
Yeah.
Or COVID has conditions where people talk about, like my daughter who has plaque psoriasis, and sweet, and I have eczema. And I always talk about it as being quiet or loud, right?
I got 20 seconds.
So it's sort of, anyway, COVID is accelerating the pace of a lot of conditions people have, and it's making a lot of their other conditions get louder. So this is nothing to play around with. They need to send them athletes home, and we need to put a pause on the Olympics. That's my bottom line.
Mic drop on that. And guess what? I agree with you. And send everybody home. Respect the Japanese people. They do not want you there. They're in a state of emergency. Respect people, everybody. Let's talk about our trip to France last week. President Emmanuel Macron, bestowed upon Reverend the Commander of the Legion of Honor, which is the highest civilian and military honor that they can give to a human being. It's one of the biggest honors in the world. And Reverend Jackson and the civil rights movement was honored by receiving it. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm Santita Jackson. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. It's a joy to be back with you after I've been away for a week. Friday, July 23rd, 2021. WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station and AM 950 radio. My family to the north in Minneapolis, St. Paul. God bless you all today. It's a joy to be with you. We're going to talk about why I was away, where I was. This French Legion of Honor, commander of the Legion of Honor. That is what Reverend Jesse Jackson is now, joining Josephine Baker and James Baldwin and Walt Disney. That's right. And so many notables from all around the world. President Eisenhower, so many notables. Why have they been given this award? What does it mean? What did it mean? What did it feel like? So many people, we didn't realize that this award resonated with so many people around the world. Okay, around the world maybe, but in the United States. And we're going to talk about that with some people who were part of this delegation. And I cannot wait to get your feedback. So call me or text me at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. GWC Injury Lawyers gives you the opportunity to text, but I want to hear your voices today if I can. 773-763-9278. And let's talk about this Legion of Honor and what our freedom movements mean to people all around the world. All of these nameless, faceless people, if you think that your work doesn't matter, when we were in Paris with President Macron, as we watched the American embassy receive us and their excitement, there's something that we're doing on the ground that is touching people all over the world, and we need to talk about it. You need to know that you are somebody and why your work really does matter. So let's get to it, everybody. Chicago, we're going to have a high of 86 degrees, partly cloudy. It is really going to be warm in Minneapolis, St. Paul, 94 degrees, partly cloudy. The Olympics have begun. At least they are in their opening ceremonies right now. So everybody, if you're looking at it, let me know what you're thinking about it. Should they continue to go forward with this? We've been talking about that with Dr. Deborah Verholden. The Dow closed up 25 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 52 points. And the S&P 500 closed up 8 points. Mississippi's Attorney General is pressing to end Roe v. Wade. Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch has urged the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision legalizing abortion nationwide prior to viability, which can occur at around 24 weeks. The Mississippi Attorney General has called the 1973 decision egregiously wrong and has asked the High Court to allow a controversial Mississippi law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks to go into effect. What do you think about that? You know we're going to talk about that next week. The United Nations is warning that the threat from jihadi terror groups is expanding, suggesting they thrive where pressure against them is waning in Afghanistan, where the U.S. is wrapping up its military withdrawal. The U.N. warns of a potential further deterioration in the security situation as America leaves, everybody. Well, what happened on January 6th? Well, that is something that Speaker Pelosi is trying to get to the bottom of. But it's really tough. Speaker Pelosi and House Democrats are moving ahead with their investigation of the January 6th attack on the Capitol and are looking into adding more GOP gravitas heft to their efforts after Republican leaders withdrew participation on the select committee. Pelosi told reporters yesterday that despite House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's decision to remove all five of his choices for the panel after she vetoed two of them, the committee will proceed as originally planned. We will see how that goes. Another Surfside, Florida condominium is evacuated after the building has been deemed unsafe. People who live in a waterfront condominium just a few blocks from last month's deadly building collapse in Surfside, Florida, have voluntarily evacuated because several structural problems have been identified by an engineer. Many studies are showing that perhaps nothing should have been built in that part of Florida in the first place. We will see. U.S. jobless claims show a surprise gain well above expectations, everybody. Weekless jobless claims totaled 419,000, exceeding the projected 350,000 person estimate. Inflation, in the meantime, is pushing consumer goods to an all-time high. Representative Maxine Waters is on top of it, everybody. She's asking for a federal probe into the Los Angeles Sheriff's Office. Why? Because they have something called the Executioner's Gang. This group within the L.A. Sheriff's Office was accused of celebrating police shootings by a whistleblower within the station. Can you believe it, everybody? She's called on U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland and Assistant Attorney General Kirsten Clark to conduct a federal probe into this alleged executioner's gang within the Los Angeles Police Department. Don't worry about it. I'm going to reach out to her because I want to find out about it. I fear getting hit from behind. That is what Chicago area residents are saying as they take to the expressways. Expressway shootings in Chicago are at an all-time high. 43rd shooting took place on the Dan Ryan just this year. It is the most dangerous expressway in the area. Wow. And we know that we are having weather issues all over the world. Well, extreme weather, while it's wreaking havoc, Dubai has come up with a solution. They are making it rain. That's right. They're creating fake rain to tackle their record-breaking heat wave way past 100 degrees, everybody. In the meantime, U.S. life expectancy fell by 1.5 years in 2020, the biggest decline in generations. Well, let's get right to it, everybody. I have a tremendous panel who were with us, and some people were here. Reverend Jeanette Wilson, special advisor to Reverend Jesse Jackson, she was here watching. And so it's interesting because I wanted you to hear what we experienced in Paris, France, with this Legion of Honor ceremony, and what this award means by granting this to Reverend Jesse Jackson, along with other notables. This is one of the most prestigious awards in the world, everybody. In the world, and they don't give it out lightly. And they gave it to Reverend Jackson, the highest civilian and military award that the country of France can give, because of his 60 plus years of work in civil and human rights. Indeed, they said, "You are our brother, and you embody all that we are and want to be in France." It was really, really quite an honor, and we were so honored to have been received so warmly by first our American embassy, but by the president of France himself, who spent a lot of time with Reverend Jesse Jackson. Our interpreter was none other than Attorney C.K. Hoffler, the chairwoman of the board of Rainbow Push and the outgoing president of the National Bar Association, the largest and oldest black bar association in the world. Indeed, she is completely francophone. And so we felt very, very secure as she interpreted for Reverend Jackson with the president. And we thank you for that. We've got Jonathan Jackson, national spokesman for Rainbow Push, who was with Reverend Jackson physically in these meetings, in the private meetings with President Macron. And we have Shelley Davis, Reverend Jackson's national political director, who is with Reverend Jackson every step of the way all the time, who also logistically, he and James Gomez, our head of international affairs, got us around and helped us to understand what we were navigating. And so we thank you all. And, of course, let me start with you, Jonathan Jackson, because you, of course, were with Reverend Jackson as he met with President Macron. Your thoughts about this honor?
Hello, Santita. It was quite an honor. I am bike riding right now. And what was interesting is my father, Reverend Jackson, brought up the name Major Marshall Taylor. And the name my father has just become familiar with. This was the gentleman that was known as the world's fastest human being in 1901, having set the world's record for fastest time trials, a quarter mile, a mile, and 2 miles on a bicycle. A bicycle at that time was faster than a motorcycle and an automobile. And Major Taylor from Indianapolis, Indiana, who moved on to Rochester and on to Europe, he won that crown, if you will, that title in 1901. This race preceded the Tour de France. And so he's a very famous person. And he raced 47 out of 52 races that he competed in France, and ended up coming back to Chicago, died here, was buried in the south suburbs. And Reverend Jackson asked President Macron, did he know the name Major Taylor? And he says, yes, of course. He's world famous. He's very famous here. My father was listening. Oh, he said, you know, it's not a name. He said, it's known in certain cycling circles, but not very well known in the States. He says, well, either Americans don't like cycling or they don't know their history. From that point, I'd like to step into what the award meant. That this is the 230th year from 1791 till 2021 of Toussaint L'Ouverture having been the first African, if you will, to break the chains of colonialism And it's been 230 years. It's been 120 years since Major Taylor was the world champion that he won in France. And it's been another 80 years since the Tuskegee Airmen in 1941 with Eleanor Roosevelt took to the skies to help save Europe. And to put it in that context, I had tears in my eyes to think that all these great people of Josephine Baker and so many others and our grandfather that fought in World War II. And after he fought France in World War II and helped defeat the Nazis, when he came back to the United States, I remember my grandfather telling me he had to get in the train car behind the Nazis in America. And some former Nazis became his boss in Greenville, South Carolina. I saw all the complexity and contrast. So it was a high moment. It was a great moment. And one of the words that stuck out with me from President Macron's public statement was, River Jackson, you've done so much, and there's so much more to do. And President Macron seemed to have a keen focus on, I believe, in asserting his leadership to challenge institutions and arrangements and agreements that have been in place now for decades that no longer fit the current world structure. The African nations are asked if their currencies to be, if you will, emancipated. He's making efforts in that direction. And in closing, I would tell you, for President Macron to give my father this award, it was a kind of a transcendental moment for me. I saw my father, then I saw something bigger than my father, if you will. I saw President Macron, from his words and his knowledge, had a better appreciation for his understanding and the depth of segregation and racism in the United States and how much he's learning about how he can move his country and culture forward from looking and understanding the history of African Americans. So I'd like to think that our father accepted that award on behalf of all civil rights participants, not just the leaders, but the ground crew, the workers, everyone that made a difference to make the world a better place.
Well, you know, Jonathan, I think that's what was striking. You know, I thought about Rebecca and Esther and Hazel and Shirley Owen. And I thought about Mrs. Amelia Boynton. I thought about Fannie Lou Hamer. I thought about all of the James Orange, Reverend James Bevel, all of these people he was carrying with him. Ida B. Wells, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, all of these people he was carrying with him on that day. And so it was really about more than him. And yet it was about the 60 years of service that he was rendering, because the president, Attorney C.K. Hoffler, appeared to be speaking. It wasn't just a speech. It seems that he was speaking to Reverend Jackson directly as he presented the award to him. C.K.?
Good morning, Santita. Good morning to everybody on the panel. And I would echo everything that Jonathan said and Santita that you said. What was absolutely amazing and spellbinding for me about this whole journey to Paris and having the, I was just so humbled and honored to be a part of it, was that, you know, we were in a foreign country, in a country that has been a significant ally to the United States, where we have been, and we're African-Americans. African-Americans have played a role and been integrated or woven into the fabric of that country for many years, when we were excluded in the U.S., precluded from participating in the U.S. in various activities and the like. We were well-received in France. And yet we do know France, like other colonial powers, has a troubled history with, you know, because they were a colonial power. But what was so striking to me was the level of detail and the type of recognition that Reverend Jackson got that was so well deserved. I would dare say, and I've only, you know, worked with Reverend for almost 34 years. Certainly that pales a time in comparison to Santita, you and Jonathan, and your brothers, and the extraordinary contributions that your mother, Dr. Jacqueline Jackson, has made to this effort. But what struck me was, I dare say I've not seen another head of state in the world, or even in this country, recognize your father in the way that he was recognized by the president of France. And that brought tears to my eyes for this reason. You know, sometimes, and that's not to say that so many people have given your father the recognition for his extraordinary work over six decades. So please don't get me wrong. It was the manner in which he was recognized by the president of France, by President Macron, that brought tears to my eyes. Well, finally, I felt, finally, a head of state, and I know that there are other heads of state also in Africa that recognize him this way, is giving Reverend Jackson, from beginning of his journey till now, the recognition, and bringing with this recognition the least of these, all the people in the struggle, the unnamed people, the faceless people, those that died so that we might live, and that all of that was funneled through Reverend Jackson and recognition of his efforts and mobilizing a global movement for freedom, for human rights, for civil rights, for dignity of man and woman, for labor rights, all of that together, this president touched on. Whereas others, in recognizing your father, may have touched on one aspect, but he got right to it. Every single aspect and every important milestone of your father's life, this president touched on. And that was the passion and intimacy with which he delivered that recognition. And we really felt in that room and around the world, people were live streaming it, the reason why your father would receive, why Reverend Jesse Jackson would receive this award, the highest award that anyone can receive in France by the president of the French government. And ironically, this was an award created by Napoleon Bonaparte. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the irony. Napoleon created this award to recognize the best of the best, the most extraordinary of the extraordinary, civilians and military people that had saved, he believed, his country. And in many respects, this award was given to someone who people believe have saved the world from moral, human rights, and civil rights standpoint. And so to be there at that moment in time, Santita, to share with you all, his children, candidly, and his granddaughter, to be there with you all, to be there with his close advisors, those that have been in the trenches with him, those who were at home watching, who have been in the trenches with him, all of those people in the world whose lives he saved. There are people who we don't even realize whose families, movements, Reverend has been a part of movements in so many countries. So to be there at that moment in time was special. It's almost hard to explain and to express. You know, as a lawyer, I felt that at that moment, that it probably was the apex of my experience as a lawyer, because I've had the humbling honor of being a lawyer to your dad, Reverend Jackson, for almost 34 years. And for Jonathan, let me just speak to Jonathan, being in the meeting with the president, with his father, expressing all of the things that they expressed was also a moment in history. And the world needs to know that Santita Jackson, who we know is this amazing, brilliant, talented journalist, radio talk show host, political commentator, actress, all of that, sang at the request of the president so beautifully. And that just made this whole experience, it took it to another level, personalizing the journey that one of Reverend Jackson's children, whose talent exceeds all talent, would right there, within, the president made the request, a minute later, once she got the microphone, this Santita Jackson was hosting this show, sang beautifully. And you talk about bringing people to tears. It was so very moving. So I don't know if I've captured the essence of it. It's hard for me to do that. There probably should be a book written about what it meant. But I can tell you, the people's movement, the people of the world, the downtrodden, as François Fanon called them, les damnés de la terre, the wretched of the earth, were represented in that day in that day, at that moment, through the accolades and honor given to Reverend.
Well, you know, when we come back, excuse me, CK, thank you so much. We got a tremendous homecoming organized by Rainbow Push, by Pastor Reverend Jeanette Wilson Esquire. But I want to hear from Shelley Davis when we get on the other side. He's Reverend's National Political Director, and he's been traveling with Reverend. He's been by his side for, oh my goodness, 2 decades, 20 years. And he has been in these rooms with Reverend just about every one of them over the past 20 years. I cannot wait to hear your reflections, Shelley Davis, what you've seen. Many people might, you, when you see Reverend, you see Shelley Davis, you might not know that he was a city councilman. He has tremendous political experience, and yet he's come to work for Reverend for years, and we have benefited from his sense of history, his sense of that which is appropriate. You know, you remind us of Reverend Wyatt T. Walker, who was like the dean of protocol, I think, Jonathan, that's what we used to call him. Everything has to be lined up just so. But I cannot wait to hear from you, Shelley Davis, and you, Reverend Wilson, and everybody. You know, want to let you know what happened. We found out that this honor has resonated all around the world. But we were there, and we wanted to share, and we want to share with you what we saw, what happened, and why it is that your work that you do on the streets of Chicago, Edabena, Mississippi, Los Angeles, Detroit, Flint, Minneapolis, St. Paul, on, everything that you're doing matters to someone, not just next door to you, but all around the world. Back with more of the Santita Jackson Show in just a few minutes. Violence, injustice, and neglect. We can change the world, change the world, change the world. Oh, yes, we can. We can change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
War and hate to a place of love, it's not too late. Gotta save the children, we can't wait. Let's change the world.
I'm Santita Jackson, coming to you from WCPT 820, on the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota, Jonathan, Nicole Knighton Baldwin, our baby sister, is saying, sing, Jonathan. Be quiet, Nicole. You know Jonathan's tone deaf. He's atonal. Get out of here. I'm just, oh my gosh, Jonathan. But people, Mr. Todd, tell it, Whitney Young told you he'd pass you, give you a B if you just kept your mouth shut and didn't throw off his section.
Man, he said a C, and I don't think I got that.
That's all right. But, Jonathan, you were making a point before we go to Shelley Davis. And, of course, we have Attorney C.K. Hoffler with us and Pastor Reverend Jeanette Wilson Esquire. And Jonathan Jackson, national spokesman for Rainbow Push. Jonathan, as we were going with our father to get this tremendous honor to receive that because of the work that he has done, the work that, oh my goodness, our mother has done, so much of her work has gone unsung. You had, wait a minute, Reverend's got a court date?
Yes. Continue. Can I first say thank you, Attorney C.K. Hoffler, from negotiations for President Eric Steed and Francophone Country. She's been with Reverend every step of the way on these issues. Reverend Wilson, I can't compare anything that you've done. That's been absolutely marvelous. You've done so much with so little for so long. God bless you. And Shelley, for every step you've taken, we love you and appreciate you. Totally unsung. But, Santita, I was just saying that our father, Reverend Jackson, has an open court date because he refused to pay the fine for civil disobedience for having stood in the streets of Washington, D.C. 3 weeks ago in demonstration against the filibuster that's taking place on the Voting Rights Act. So on December 22nd of this year, our father, God bless, will be over 80 years old, has a D.C. court date for fighting for the Voting Rights Act. We are going through a crisis of civilization. Our right to vote is under attack. Some people didn't know it was, it is. And on one side of the pond, if you will, the ocean, we're being honored as the highest civilian honor you can give. And on this side, Reverend Jackson has a misdemeanor, another. He's been jailed over 30 times in his lifetime fighting for American rights that also demonstrate across the world. So I want to put that in, out there. Honored and being jailed. We were arrested 3 weeks ago in D.C.
Oh, my goodness. And I can see President Macron right now going, huh? But Shelley Davis.
Well, and it was it was 30 years ago with C.K. Hoffler. We had just left the Pope and talking about Haiti and Aristide. And 48 hours later, we were jailed in D.C. for Free South Africa. So there's some symmetry to this.
and it's a good thing I'm licensed in D.C. It's just a good thing.
Because we do need you, and we do use you. Wow.
Types of freedom. I mean, just think of the irony of that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, President Macron would be completely fitting because of the way he described Reverend's fight for freedom and justice. And this is a fight for freedom and justice.
Amen. And it's ongoing. Shelley Davis, you've seen so much with Reverend over the past two decades. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Santita. Good morning to the audience, to C.K. Hoffler, to Jonathan and Reverend Wilson. Listen, thanks for asking me to come on this morning. It's actually my first time on your show live. I'm always behind the scenes, but thanks so much for having me. Listen, I've been with Reverend for 20-plus years. And as you all know, he's received many honors and awards across the country, across the globe itself. But by far, this was one of the most admirable, most inspiring, most gracious award that I've experienced over the two decades that I've been with him. We've been from Hong Kong to London, from Ireland to Cape Town, from Canada to Argentina. And by far, this is one of the most recognized honors that he has received. And so it's been a privilege and a pleasure to have been there in Paris. As far as the experience beforehand, during, and then after, beforehand, he was so excited, very excited to be there and to be acknowledged and to be recognized. And in our most intimate moments, as far as talking as we're in his room, he said, you know, this is one of the things that we work so hard for. This is one of the things that we do all of the work that we've done across the country, across the globe. This is what we do it for. And he still was unselfish in saying that it was him. He did a lot of this and did most of this work, you know, with the help of his staff. And he still included us and said, it's us. He's an absolute amazing, dedicated and committed civil and human rights leader. And I could not be more proud to work for him and to be by his side. I'd like to add something that Macron mentioned. He mentioned Reverend Jackson's 1990 role in freeing the French hostages during the first Gulf War. He also mentioned several other things that Reverend Jackson did as relates to the injustice and inequality here in America. And so it was an absolute amazing opportunity, Santita. I could not be more proud to have been there to experience it with him. So I would just like to say thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, no. We couldn't have this show without you, Shelley, because you've been with him. And, you know, as we know, as many as the world knows, Reverend has Parkinson's disease, which has advanced. And so it's more challenging for him to get around. But he is going to continue to move and push and push and move. Parkinson's he hasn't wrapped his mind around it. He just keeps on pushing and pushing. But you're there in the moments that no one sees, making sure that he is taken care of. And I have to thank you on behalf of my family, on behalf of the Rainbow Push family, on behalf of everyone, for just being so kind and so loyal to him. And special shout out to Bruce Corbett, who does so much for Reverend. I'm sorry.
If I can, Bruce has been one of the most recognized persons to be with him. I think over the past year, Bruce has done an amazing job to ensure that he gets to and from. And as in Bruce's words, he said to keep him upright Bruce has done an amazing job. But I'd like to give gratitude to James Gomez, our international affairs director based in D.C. James, across the country for the last 20-plus years as well, has been instrumental in keeping our relationships tight, keeping us informed on international news, on international affairs as it relates to human and civil rights issues that are happening across the country and across the globe. James is beyond instrumental in the work that we do. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't mention James Gomez as well as Brewster. Brewster captures
all
of our movement across the country. And so just to like to say thank them, as well as the American Embassy, the Charge d'Affaires, Brian Aguilar. The U.S. Embassy, Santita, recognized and acknowledged us with a reception and was so gracious to allow us to come. They held a reception. Reverend was able to give us a few remarks. So it was absolutely amazing to be there. And then, of course, to go to the president's home, it was magnificent. And I made a joke with James and I said, you know, these chandeliers in here, Miss J would go crazy. But it was an absolute amazing opportunity. We had a dinner following the ceremony, and everyone was asking, well, how did you and CK get this program together? When did you get it together? And I think CK can chime in on this as well. And so we're like 30 seconds before the dinner started and before Reverend walked in, I went up to her and I said, CK, can you kind of moderate and we can kind of piggyback and go back and forth? And she said, oh, sure we can. So it appeared that there was a program going on, but there was no program other than the 30 seconds of preparation that we had going on.
Oh, Reverend will teach you now. Reverend will teach you. But, you know, but what was also striking, you know, given James Gomez's work, because this work is ongoing. This is something. And that's why we appeal to you for support for Rainbow Push, because, you know, Reverend works very hard to hire people who can do this work. And, you know, we try to keep the doors open for you. I mean, the fact is we have the black Europeans who came in, you know, Simon and Minister of Parliament, Diane Abbott, the longest serving black member of parliament in the history of Great Britain, Shelley, CK, Jonathan, would you like to speak to that?
It was amazing. I can speak to the part where, as far as the administration part, when James reached out to our allies across the globe, from London to Ireland to Sweden to Gabon to West Africa and to South Africa, the response was overwhelming. Mind you, more than a handful came, but I'd say over 10 to 15, it was a conflict. They wanted to come. They were en route, but they just couldn't. They couldn't make it. But the overwhelming interest in coming to celebrate someone that has done so much for so long and continues to work at 79 years old, they said that they had to show homage to such an icon. And it was heartwarming. It was heartfelt. I know that evening that we had the dinner, I got to thinking as we were standing there, literally, I said, you know, I cannot not allow them to have a few words to acknowledge. They've come far, from far and near, and could not go by without letting them have a few words. So that's what I would say about the international crowd that did come and show homage.
You know, and Cynthia DiBartolo and her husband Mark, and Jim Reynolds and his wife Sandy, Marty King and his wife Cindy. We had quite a grouping of people who were with us. How did this land in the United States, Reverend Wilson?
Well, I think in the United States we had the ability to watch as you all were live streaming, and people were just in tears where all around the world, and people were calling saying, we didn't know that this was happening. We were not aware. And I think when the French president, Macron, outlined why he was presenting the award, the award to Reverend Jackson, it was as if he was giving the world a history lesson. He was doing a biographical sketch of the work that Reverend Jackson has done over these 60 years. And he put in significant detail the impact of Reverend Jackson's work and the organization's work on the world stage. And so it is something that we can share with children who don't really know who and what Reverend Jackson and what Rainbow Push from Operation Breadbasket, Operation Push, all of that was put in the context of this Medal of Honor. And the interesting thing I learned about the Medal of Honor is it was for weapons of merit. It wasn't for weapons of war. And so as we look at fighting and struggling for human rights and dignity every single day, you now have a commander. We see Reverend Jackson as the commander of honor, fighting for the rights of people who may never meet him, but he has been pushing for them. When you think about how all across the years, my first real opportunity to do something international was with John Bustamante when Reverend was trying to go to Syria to free hostages. And I didn't know anything about international travel and getting people in and out of the country. And so John Bustamante was, you know, he was just very frustrated because he said, we can get them out of the country. The issue is making sure they can return because you have to have the permission of the United States Customs and all of that. I was doing international law as a recent law graduate. I was so excited. And so when I look back to 1980 to now, and I see the journey of Reverend Jackson, in the Bible there's this great cloud of witnesses that are watching all of us run this race called life. And so, you know, I was thinking about Bustamante, Dr. Y.T. Walker, all from the balcony of heaven, cheering Reverend on, excited about what progress we're making. Because sometimes people say, we're not making progress. Yes, we are. Now, when Jonathan talks about Reverend going to jail continuously, it's not about an honor for him. It's about service. On the eve of going somewhere, he's still trying to fight for people who are struggling. People who we got inmates who are fighting to close, to eliminate this idea of solitary confinement. And so when we were watching in the building, we were just, everybody was pumped. Everybody's phone, it was streaming on phones, on all of our devices, learning more about the man that we work with and work for every single day. To see him recognized at that highest level of honor in the world was just amazing. And we touch him each and every day. Every day he comes to the office as if he has to. He is compelled. So you can't outwork him. You just have to survive.
You try to keep up.
I don't know how. Here's a man flew. You know, he got two time zones. He flew 8 hours. We welcome him back. He speaks to the media, speaks to us, and he's as excited as if he has been rested for a week. And then he returns to the office the next morning, got a list of things he's getting ready for us to do next. I'm like, man, take a break.
Mm-mm. No, he's not
supposed to do that.
No, well, you know, and the work does continue. I mean, Jonathan, what was striking to you about, I don't want to get this out because I only have a few more minutes before we get off the air. Jonathan, what was striking to you about, of course, we, you know, can't, you know, reveal private conversations, but it seemed that the president of France was particularly struck by Reverend and that he was wanting to learn from him about how he saw the world and what he sees ahead in the world. Jonathan?
Well, I would say that the feeling that I had was of the world's most industrialized, advanced nations for economics, for military power, for history. President Macron sits at that table. He can call and on anyone in the world, his reach is vast. the wealth of France is great. The Francophile country is over almost 300 million people. The country itself, over 60 million people. And his time is very precious. But for him to single out an American, a citizen from abroad, and to see a black man as a person worthy of honor and a person worthy of his personal time. He's in an election cycle. He's got a lot of things pressing upon him. But for him to say, I want to spend time with you. And this is an award like our Presidential Medal of Freedom that the president can give out ceremoniously and give out as many as he likes on that day. But he cleared the stage and wanted it to be singularly focused on one person, highlighting one people's cause. And for him to talk about the history of segregation and racism and it being in law and what Reverend Jackson has overcome in his lifetime, he seemed very humbled to be in his presence and also felt as if there was so much he can learn from him and was able to ask the Reverend questions that I will not share. Mm-hmm. But wanted to get his worldview from the pedestal and the perch that he sits in at this time. And in conclusion, I would say, President Macron, when you say the spirit of Zeitgeist, the spirit of the time, he's a young man who has the power and influence and is using it. His legacy is not going to look back on an if I would have, could have, should have. He's making his moves now while he has the power, and he's reaching out for knowledge and influence, and I think that is quite remarkable. He's given speeches in French on structural racism and racism in transportation, and he's got the same challenges in France that the United States has here. There's a reactionary wealthy group in France. If you can imagine the relationships in Guadeloupe and in Martinique, there's some French wealthy slave-owning families that still have ownership of the land in those islands today that they did 400 years ago. So there's a very dark part of France that he's having to fight. Even when words are being weaponized in the United States, critical race theory, it's simply history telling the truth about where we come from. He's facing that same sort of reactionary right wing in France. So I hope we lift him up in prayer and give him increased strength. But he is a man that's using his power judiciously. And for him to understand the American, African-American plight and be able to make the parallels to France, I think he's a brilliant man and being God-driven at this time.
I got a minute for everyone here, just under a minute. Reverend Wilson, your thoughts? And we've got a convention coming up.
Okay. Well, we have a convention August the 1st through the 6th. I would encourage everyone to register. It's free. And we're going to cover a Reverend receiving the Legion of Honor Award, but also we're going to address many of the issues that Jonathan mentioned. We're looking at critical race theory. We're looking at where we are economically from Tulsa to Wall Street. We're looking at where women are. What are the issues that women are focused on? We're looking at some of the legal challenges. You don't want to miss this convention. Go to rainbowpush.org and register. You can see it from any one of your platforms, cell phone, iPhone, generic phone, however you want to view it, you can see it.
Absolutely. Attorney C.K. Hoffler, well, before you, let me hear you, Shelley Davis, former Councilman Davis, who's been on the road with Reverend for 20-odd years. And, wow, what a trip.
Love Shelley.
Absolutely.
Listen, it's been an honor and a privilege to be able to do the work that he hired me to do, came on not knowing what to do and how to do it. But through the training and through the trials and tribulations of learning and understanding the road, Reverend Wilson mentioned about didn't know anything about international travel. I tell you, I'd been to London before I came to Reverend, but I'd not been, you know, to another country. And so from as I mentioned, Hong Kong to London to Ireland to Cape Town, it was something that I'd never experienced, and so I'm grateful and I'm thankful for his service, my service to him. It has been an absolute amazing honor. Can't get this in college, can't get this in school, and only get it on the road. It's an absolute honor and a privilege. And I might add, too, to get a chance to meet an amazing and exciting family. You guys have been amazing and have made the journey what it is. So I appreciate that as well.
Oh, we love you, Shelley. Attorney C.K. Hoffler, Madam Chair, 1 minute.
Well, I echo the sentiments of Shelley about the amazing family. You know, this family has had to share their father, their husband, with all the world. And so they are an amazing family. They are an amazing tribute. And they are just as significant a part of the movement, of this international global movement, as anyone. So I, too, am humbled and honored to have been in this space for almost 34 years. We also have a conference that starts today, the National Bar Association. We're starting our annual conference. It's virtual, nationalbar.org. We are honoring Reverend Jackson as well. He is getting the Global Advocate Award. So we have been elevated to be on the platform with the President of France in recognizing our hero, Reverend Jackson, and we're honored to do so as well. We just know we're in good company when France recognized, the President of France recognized, the National Bar does too, as does Rainbow. So, Santita, thank you for this opportunity. And it just was, you know, this is going to be a time in history. And I have traveled the world as a lawyer, doing work, just as I've traveled the country as a lawyer, doing work. I'm a plaintiff's lawyer, so I'm working for the people. But this surely, for me, was one of the most important historic experiences that I had as a lawyer, and it's just such an honor. So to Reverend Jackson, we continue to salute you and love you and applaud you and praise you, because as everyone said, every single day he gets up and tries to figure out how he can help somebody. And that's and the President Macron said when they made the mold, Reverend Jackson, so many people said this, that mold that they made of this august human being cannot be replicated.
Absolutely.
So we must revere him.
And honor people while they're here. Jonathan, I only have 20 seconds. You want them? That's all right, everybody. God bless you. Wanted to give you just a bird's eye view into what we experienced over the past week. It was tremendous. Got a chance to meet with the diaspora, got a chance to meet with a lot of great Europeans, got a chance to meet with a lot of people, and just know that we brought all of you with us to France, because in honoring Reverend Jesse Jackson, they were honoring all of you, all of us. Keep marching, keep fighting, everybody. Keep Hope Alive. I'm Santita Jackson. See you on Sunday on Keep Hope Alive. Love you. God bless you, everybody.